going through it all rapidly. That being said, as I'm trying to prepare these lessons, I got to figure out what to cut. And it's difficult for me because I like...
everything.
I would much rather just give you all of the information and let you sort through it than not give you enough information and have you be bored. I'd rather have you confused than bored. So, you might be confused.
Okay.
And
I'm a little bored.
But at least hopefully that's bored. Okay.
This is really boring.
Basically, read your Bibles, people.
Yeah. The idea is, if you put time into it, all of this will make sense. If you just commit. You gotta read the text. And what I'm doing is giving you the high points. I'm giving you the plot points necessary to understand the story, as we've been talking about it. The story that starts in Genesis 1, 2, and 3, and ends in Revelation 20, 21, and 22. That story, I'm trying to get it so you can convey it. You guys have read stories before, right? Anybody ever here read Harry
What's
Potter?
Reading?
Or
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Percy Jackson.
Percy Jackson. Okay. When you read a book, when you read a novel, when you read a story, and then you try and tell the story to somebody else, you don't give them everything. You tell them the basic plot points so that they can follow it, right? Mm-hmm. Harry Potter, you tell the story about how, you know, there's a boy who finds out that he's a wizard, and he goes off to Hogwarts, and he spends some time in Diagon Alley buying his wizard stuff, and then he goes to school, and then he finds out that he's famous, and he has to battle this guy named Voldemort, who nobody wants to say his name. And you have trouble figuring out, okay, do I need to tell him that, or do I not need to tell him that? What do I need to tell them in order to get the story across? And that's the struggle I'm having.
He's a wizard now. Yes, by this guy, when he dies.
Yeah.
Where does Gandalf?
But in this one, okay. We're giving spoilers.
We're giving spoilers. So that's what we're doing with this. We went through all of Genesis last week, and it was the high points. We talked about everything. So we'll go through. We'll review what we. So Genesis 3:15, Proto Evangelium. That's the Latin phrase, first gospel. Genesis 3:15. What does it say? What does it tell us? How does it set up the story?
The seed is introduced.
Yeah, the seed is introduced. Man and woman fall, they sin, they bring death and sin into the world, and God promises that there's going to be a seed. The seed of the woman will be at enmity with seed of the serpent, and the seed of the woman will crush the serpent's head, he will bruise the seed of the woman's heel. And so we're looking for that seed as we go through Genesis. And we're trekking through Genesis, and all these people are coming along. Is it Cain? Is it Abel? Is it Noah? Is it Abraham? Noah, right? He comes along. We know he's not the seed because he sins and he dies. And that's kind of your cue as to, is this the seed? Well, does he crush the serpent's head? Is he bruised on the heel by the serpent? And does he sin or does he die? Because those four things are the qualifications to be the seed, right? The one who's going to finish it. One who's going to bring the story to a climax. And so Noah, yeah, he does the whole ark thing. You know that story. But he gets off the ark and he gets drunk. Has that whole run-in with Canaan. And he dies. And remember, we looked at it and we saw how over and over and over again you're reading these genealogies, you read these stories, and it always tells you he lived to a ripe old age and then he died. And he lived to a ripe old age and he died. He lived this long, he had this many kids, and he died. And we're looking for this seed, and we're tracking the story. Get to the story of the Tower of Babel. God tells everybody, spread, fill, cover the earth, multiply. And they, instead, group together. They say, we're going to build a tower, and nothing will be impossible. And so God says, we're going to have to go down and confuse their languages, because they still got sin. We got to fix that before we make things impossible for them. And so he goes down, confuses the languages, spreads them over the earth, and then the story focuses on this one guy, and we get a lot more chapters about this guy, Abraham. And we talked through the Abrahamic covenant, we talked through the promises that God made to Abraham. What kind of things did God promise Abraham?
His land as the dust on the
sand.
Yes. He made a whole bunch of repeated promises about his seed being as the dust of on the sands of the earth and the stars in the heavens.
His offspring will inherit the land.
His offspring, his seed, will inherit the land. We talked a lot about, is that singular or plural? And figuring that out. We had the land. What does he promise him?
Everything from the Euphrates to the
Euphrates.
Yeah, nice
memory. Promise him the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. Land, seed, and blessing. We're gonna review the Abrahamic covenant on a slide in a little bit. His son Isaac comes along. We had the story where he almost sacrifices Isaac. And later we saw that God makes the same promise to Isaac. All the things that he promised to Abraham, he promised the same thing to Isaac. He reiterates the promise. Chapter 26, verses 3-5. He tells him, I will make your seed as numerous as the dust of the earth. I will give him this land. And through you all the nations of the world will be blessed. That's the same thing to Jacob. Jacob is Isaac's son, and he makes the same promises. He says, I will bless you, I will make a great nation out of you, I will make your descendants as the stars in the heavens, and through you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. I will give you the land on which you lie. So we're tracking this progress of now God's working with this one family, Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, and he keeps promising them that he'll make them this great nation, but it hasn't happened yet. So far in the story, chapter 28. Abrahamic covenant, we just went over that, right? Three basic parts of the promises that God makes to Abraham. Land, seed, and blessing. You think LSB instead of LSD.
Nice.
Land, seed, blessing. To your offspring, I will give the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. I will make you a great nation, numerous as the dust and as the stars. Those are the two metaphors he uses, or the two similes, excuse me. And blessing. I will bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you, and in you all the nations of the world will be blessed. And we remember we said, that's if you want to point to where you are in the Bible, it's right there. In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That's where you come in. You're the families of the earth who get blessed in Abraham by his seed. So spoilers, right? We're looking ahead in the story. Who's the seed?
Jesus.
And in Jesus, we get grafted into Israel. We receive those blessings. In him, we, the nations of the earth, will be blessed. Unless anybody here is Jewish. Is anybody here Jewish?
I'm
Jewish by adoption.
I'm new Jewish.
My grandma and my mom fight on whether or not I'm Jewish. So I'm not.
Why you don't know?
So when we finished the story last week, we saw Jacob, we saw the whole story of Joseph, right? And we saw all of Jacob's 12 sons, and they were, at the end, Jacob's dying in Egypt, and he's blessing his 12 sons at the end of Genesis, okay? So that's where we finished last week. And so we got this family of 12 guys and their families living in Egypt, all right? Exodus picks up 400 years later. So
the slavery and everything's already happened.
Yeah, people start multiplying in Egypt. Jacob's 12 sons all have lots and lots of sons, and their families grow and get quite numerous. They're all over the place. And they're enslaved now. 400 years goes by. Somehow, Joseph's been long forgotten, and they're enslaved by Egypt, and they are the workforce for the Egyptian pharaohs. And so the story now picks up and focuses in on another main character, Moses.
Moses.
I can't hear the name Moses without thinking, Moses. From, no?
Say it already.
No, from Ten Commandments.
You're so close, though.
No, Singing of the Ring, you're so close.
Prince of Egypt.
Great Singing of the Ring.
Yeah.
Moses. Oh, you
should watch it, really.
So you guys know the story of Moses, right? He's born, and Pharaoh's trying to kill everybody in the... Right? And so his mom puts him in a basket, covers it with pitch, waterproofs it, sends it down the Nile, and Pharaoh's daughter picks it up and raises Moses in her own household. And then Moses is out walking, he kills a guy, and so he runs. He runs off to Midian, and chapter 3, he encounters a burning bush. He finds a wife over in Midian, descendant of Ishmael, is his wife. Mm-hmm. he's out tending the sheep one day, and he sees up on the mountainside a bush that does not is on fire but does not burn. And he goes up to see the bush, and God starts talking to him. There's been 400 years of silence at this point. And God starts talking to this guy. And he says something that is just mind-boggling for the story so far. Okay? He tells Moses his name. That's big news.
Huge.
Okay? We've had, what, 2,000, 3,000 years of history, 2,500 years of history so far. And nobody on earth so far has known the name of God. And so Moses comes up, chapter 3, verse 6 of Exodus. He's looking at the bush. The Lord saw, or verse 4. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you stand is holy ground." And he said, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." That's how they know who this God is, right? He's the one from all this story that we've just been summarizing. 400 years ago, these guys were around doing stuff. That he was really active back then. Where has he been now? Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their suffering." He tells them he's got this plan. He's going to get them out. And he tells them, "Moses, you're my guy. I want you to go and get them out of Egypt and bring them back to the land that I promised them," right? Land, seed, blessing. We got to get them back in the land. I told them that I was going to do this, and I'm faithful to that. But Moses starts complaining. He has some back and forth with God, and verse 13 hits. Then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" And God said, "I am who I am." He said, "Yahweh. Yahweh is my name. You shall say Yod He Vav He." You read it from right to left. YHWH. That's his name, Yahweh. And it means "I am." It's the present tense to be verb. Did that track that we went into English for a second?
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's Jewish?
Well, that's Hebrew is the language, but present tense to be verb. What's the to be verb? How would you say
is,
being?
Is.
I am.
I am. You are. Right. Those are all to be verbs. It is something. It exists. So, present tense. I first person am. I exist. God's saying, "That's my name. I'm the one who is. I'm the one who exists." As opposed to all those other gods, they don't. This is big stuff. There's a whole lot of really cool implications from this. But if you refer back to Genesis 32, back when Joseph was wrestling with this man, they don't name him, and he actually asks, "What's your name?" Jacob's wrestling with him. You remember that story? Jacob's wrestling with an angel?
We didn't go over it.
We didn't?
Mm-mm. You said we didn't have time.
God. See? And you pick the stuff that you think are important, and then you need it later. See, all of it's important.
Dude, take a rabbit trail.
Yeah, let's do it. Genesis 32, verse 22. Flip back there. Always try and be reading along. It'll keep you focused. Otherwise, you'll zone out and you won't learn anything.
Genesis,
that's okay.
Yeah.
Genesis 32, 32, verse 22. Verse 22. The same night he arose. So Jacob's on his way back to meet with Esau, his brother. And this happens in between. Same night he arose and took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 children and crossed the ford of Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, everything else he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the break of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket. Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. He said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." He wouldn't tell him his name. He recognized that he was wrestling with some with God or heavenly messenger, or some people say this was Jesus, some people say this is an incarnation of the Holy Spirit, some people say it was just an angel.
Where do you go?
This is God's messenger here, or God himself. But he won't tell him his name. This is a big sticking point for the Jews. They're like, we don't know his name. We serve a God and we don't know his name. So when we're back in Exodus now, chapter 3, when Moses hears God's name, that's big news. Yahweh. So back in Exodus, chapter 3. Moses going back and forth with God, saying, you know, I don't know if I'm the right guy. Should send somebody else. So finally God strikes up a deal and gets him to go back. And then he has the whole run-in with Pharaoh. And you guys know that story, right? The 10 plagues of Egypt and what they do. It's interesting. Something that they make you do in seminary is study the 10 plagues and how they all line up with different gods of Egypt. And so God was systematically proving that he was better than Yahweh was proving that he was systematically better than all of the other gods of Egypt. And I gave you that chart, supplement number one. And then I didn't make this chart. I thought this was better than the one I did. So. But you can look at that yourselves. Gives you all of the names of the gods and kind of the interesting little things, tidbits.
And the guy from the mummy. And
yeah.
So there were some
Imhotep
powers that the Egyptians had. The
Yeah. Yeah. The Egyptians were able to duplicate some of these things. And we sit here and we go, you know, let's try and figure out how this worked and how this happened. I prefer not to do that. I just go, that's what the story says. It's interesting reading. So it goes through these 10 plagues, and the last one is the big one, right? What's the last plague?
The sons, the death of the firstborn.
Death of all the firstborn sons in Egypt. And God tells Moses, you know, I'm going to kill everybody, firstborn sons of everybody. But here's how you're going to be spared. The faithful people in Israel, if you want to be spared from this plague that's going to hit Egypt, you do this thing, and we're going to call it Passover. So you take a lamb, you hold on to it, and you care for it for 4 days in your house. You get to know it. And then after 4 days, you kill it. Take his blood, smear the blood on the doorposts of your home, and then you eat it. You roast it, whole thing. Eat it, and you eat it fast. And he gives you, you read chapter 12, and he actually tells you, you know, you got to have your belt in a certain way, and one foot on the floor. The whole point is you got to be ready to go, because God's coming by, and he's going to pass you over, and then you're going to be out the door, because he's going to let you go after this. This is the last plague. So much stuff that's packed into this, the Passover, that defines Jewish culture for the next 1,000 years. And so when Jesus comes on the scene, like we know he's going to, there's a lot of symbolism, imagery, allusions that you can make back to Passover with Christ. He calls himself the Lamb, or John calls him the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, mirroring both Passover and Day of Atonement, which we'll get to in a second. The blood on the doorposts, right? The blood of the Lamb. When we see that the blood was covered their doorposts, then God would pass by and spare them from judgment.
What's the significance of keeping it for 4 days, the lamb, before slaughtering it? Attached to it?
I think so. You get attached to it.
Yeah. Name it.
Makes it harder to kill.
It was a real sacrifice.
Yeah.
It's like King of Kings, man.
The dog. Verse 14 of chapter 12, though. So they're in the middle of Passover. He's in the middle of explaining how Passover is going to work. He said, "This day shall be a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations as a statute forever. You shall keep it as a feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread." And he goes through and explains the feast of unleavened bread. So you have this Passover thing one night, and then 7 days after that, you eat unleavened bread. And he's building up things that are going to define Jewish culture for quite a while. Everything we're doing here with Moses is what it means to be an Israelite. He sets everything. There is no higher prophet than Moses in in an Israelite's opinion and in a Jew's opinion. Moses is the guy. And he wrote more of the Bible than anybody else, I think, when you do a word count. So that he is the one to look to.
Why did they need to eat the lamb quickly?
I want you to read the story and come to your own conclusions. Why do you think that? Because he doesn't tell you word for word. This is why you're reading it quickly. He just tells you to.
Oh.
So use the context, figure it out. I'll tell you what I think. I think it's because they're going to be set free from Egypt the very next morning.
Oh.
So the whole point is to have the idea of haste. Be ready to go right away, because I'm providing for you in this. And so you're going to be out of Egypt pretty quick. You know the story. Pharaoh's son dies from the plague because he doesn't follow these rules and put the blood of the lamb on his doorpost. He lets the people of Israel go. They cross the Red Sea. I gave you a map of the different proposed routes of Moses' exodus, leading the people out. This is, you guys know what you're looking at?
The right side of Egypt. I mean of Africa.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Top right corner of Africa. The blue trail is the traditional trek of where everybody thinks, yeah, this has got to be where they went based on the story. Came out of Goshen. Is it working now? Okay. So they came out of Goshen there. They crossed. So the blue trail says they crossed the Red Sea, and that's the Suez Canal. Most of the current treks will say that they crossed the Red Sea, and it's up here. We don't know exactly where they crossed. But you know the story, right? Moses lifts up his staff, parts the waters, and then they crush in over the people of Egypt. And then he comes down to Mount Sinai and receives the law. Some people say it's down here. Some people say the mountain that he was on is right there, Jezreel. Other people say it's over here in this region. Again, we don't know exactly where the mountain was. We know it's somewhere in this area. So, again, I give you way too much information. You can decide if we need to get in depth this much. But I find this extremely interesting to read the account and say, okay, let's try and plan it. And then I always hold it with a grain of salt because we don't know. Regardless, they get out, they cross the Red Sea, and everybody in Israel immediately starts complaining. They're saying, Moses, we want to go back to Egypt. Moses, it's dry, it's hot, we don't like it here. You're spending way too much time up on this mountain. He comes back up and down a couple times, and while he's up there, he gets the law. God gives him the law. And the law is, you hold up your Bibles, Exodus 19 through, it kind of starts in 15, through the end of Deuteronomy, that's the law. That's the Mosaic law. 613 commandments in all. 10 big ones. You guys know the 10 commandments, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait, how many more?
613.
You should not wrestle your neighbor.
See, there's 613 of them. There's 613 things that God tells Moses to tell the people of Israel. You shall do this or you shall not do this, and you need to do this and you can't do that, and all that. They all relate back to the 10. They're all just, you know, we're going to expand it, get a little bit more specific. So when somebody hurts you in this way, this is how you should respond. There's a lot of those kind of laws. They all boil down to the 10. Jesus boiled them down to 2, right?
What chapter is that?
What chapter is it? Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy. Somewhere in Deuteronomy. I don't know off the top of my head. I'll find it. 34?
I don't know. It says.
That
no.
Doesn't sound
never
right.
Mind.
The theme or point of the law. I wish we could just spend all of our time studying Leviticus and Deuteronomy, but most people try to lynch me whenever I do that. So, the theme of the law, it can be summed up in Leviticus 19, verse 2. which says, speak to the congregation of the people of Israel, say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Holy, does anybody know what holy, hagias, literally means?
Set apart.
Separate. Different. The whole point of the law, the whole point of giving of the law, the theme of the law is, Israel, this nation, you're going to be different from everybody else. You're going to be special. You're going to be holy. You're going to do things that other nations don't do, and they're going to think you're weird for it, and you're going to do them anyway, because you're mine. You belong to me, Yahweh. You're a special, set-apart, different, holy people. That's the whole point of the law, if you want to...
So, I'm going to ask a question right there.
Yeah.
This is for everybody. So, how were the Jews made holy? How did they achieve holiness?
By sacrificing the lamb.
That's
how their sins are forgiven.
Yeah, but that's
weren't
that's
they
different.
Not made holy?
Huh?
Were they not made holy?
They were holy, but why were they holy? What made them holy?
The law. Their faith.
You said God.
I did.
God made them holy. So God imparted His holiness to the Jews, right? So it wasn't anything that they necessarily did that made them holy. It was that God gave them the holiness. He gives a promise that God made.
Do you disagree with that?
I'd agree. I would adjust it and say that's what made them righteous.
Right. Well, the point I was making is that we tend as a church today to we preach that holiness is achievable, and it's not. It is given to us. So when this is repeated in Peter, I can't remember if it was 1st or 2nd Peter, where he repeats this, and he's talking to the Christian church after Christ, that this was a promise that God said, this is we are that, we are made that by when we receive Christ, we become holy. And it's not something that we can lose, and it's not something that we obtain. Does that make sense? So that's a very important, in my opinion, that's a very important distinction.
No.
In our faith,
absolutely,
is that we are who we are because God called us to be.
Yeah, and I would piggyback on that. There's also a misconception that says that the way that Israelites got their sins forgiven was by sacrificing. And I would say, okay, kind of.
Well, I would. I don't know where you're going.
The way that they got their sins forgiven was God forgave them of their sins by grace through faith. Now, the manifestation of that faith, the way that you could tell that they had faith was by sacrificing they were obedient to the law.
Yeah.
But Paul makes it absolutely clear. All of this law, it's supposed to show you that you can't measure up. All of these things that Moses received from God to give to Israel, it was... to really kind of give them a smack of reality and say, look up here at me. I'm God. Keep your eyes on me. You can't do it. This is my standard. Like, this is, and he handed them out, like, the lowest bar that they have to reach is all of the laws in Leviticus, all 613. That's the minimum. And God's saying, yeah, do this and you'll be perfect. And the whole point is they can't. Nobody can. You go through and read these laws, you get a headache. Because there's so many, you can't follow them all. And so, instead of recognizing the purpose behind the law, throughout the ages, the Israelites either just said, well, forget the law, we can't do it. Forget God with it. Or they said, all right, well, we're going to have to make extra laws to make sure that we can handle all these laws. We've got to just put fences around this law so that we don't even get close to breaking these laws. We'll set up extra ones. And Jesus deals with the people who did those when he comes along. But that's all down the road. The theme, the point of the law is, be holy for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And the reason for giving the law was to show the Israelites that they couldn't do it. Spoiler alert. Yeah.
It's Deuteronomy 5 where the law is found.
Deuteronomy 5 is the other place for the Ten Commandments. The other thing that this we're focusing in on the Israelites in Exodus through Deuteronomy. This is what's called the Mosaic Covenant. So we've had a couple covenants so far. We kind of glossed over the Noahic Covenant, where God, they got off the ark and God gave, made a covenant with them. What's the mark of that covenant? You guys know?
Rainbow.
Rainbow, right. He made a covenant with Abraham. What's the mark of that covenant?
Circumcision.
It says people who are circumcised will be from your descendants. He makes a covenant with Moses and with the people of Israel here. The mark of that covenant is the law. It is keeping the law. Okay? And this covenant is different from the others. This covenant has conditions. This covenant has, if you do this, I'll do this. If you do this, I'll do this. And if you don't do this, I'm going to do this in return. And it's when we get into those that things get particularly interesting. It's conditional. It's if you keep my covenant, I will. And then Exodus 19, where he's setting up the covenant, establishing it with Moses, telling him to tell the people of Israel, this is how you're going to relate with me. This is how you and I are going to work. He tells them an interesting phrase. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Okay. When you think of a kingdom, who's usually ruling?
The king.
The king. And God tells them, instead, you're going to be a kingdom of priests. You're going to be people who are not concerned with earthly rule. You're going to be people who are concerned with heavenly rule, relating to me. That's one of those things that once you get further in the story, you look back and you go, oh, it was right there. And this is one of those, you know, those mystery things, clues in the mystery that you pick up later. Exodus 24 comes along. So Moses gets the law. He gives it to the people of Israel. Chapter 24. He brings it down and he says, all right, God's got these commandments. Here's 10 of them. He's got more coming. What do you think? You going to do it? And the people of Israel say, yes, we're going to commit. Everything that God tells us to do, we're going to do it. We are his people. We are chosen. We're set apart. We're going to be holy. Chapter 24, verse 7, which we'll pick up. So then he, Moses, took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. And Moses took the blood, threw it on the people, and said, behold, the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. Blood is a big thing for the Israelites. We've already seen it on the doorposts. You're going to see it all throughout their sacrificial system. They take the blood and they do stuff with it. Very symbolic, which is why I gave you this background today. Then Moses, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu come up and they eat with God. They eat with God. Verse 10, they saw God, the God of Israel. There was under his feet, There was under his feet, as it were, a pavement of sapphire stones like the very heaven of clearness, and he did not lay his hands on the chief men of the people of Israel. They beheld God and ate and drank. This is something that gets skipped over a lot, and it's big. It's five guys who show up, or four guys. 74 guys who show up, and they go and they see God and eat and drink in his presence. And then we're moving along with the story. But this is the ratification of that covenant. That's okay, we're doing this. So Moses hangs around and he receives the rest of the law. So chapter 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31 are all God giving Moses the law. We're laying out all 613 of these commandments. The rest of them go back down to the rest of the people of Israel who came down to the bottom of the mountain and say, Moses is getting the law. Hang out and wait. And then wait for 40 days. And Moses doesn't come down the mountain. And so it takes 40 days for the people who 40 days ago were saying, everything that God tells us to do, we're going to do it, to do something else. Chapter 32. You guys know that story? Yeah, what happens in chapter 32 of Exodus?
The Israelites get impatient with Moses.
Yeah, golden calf debacle. If you have your Bible open, there's a heading that says golden calf, and you would have had that answer real quick.
I think my view surely will not enter the promised land.
Exodus 32.
Not yet.
Not yet.
See, that's what so most people think. Oh, yeah, golden calf, that was the last straw. That wasn't even the last straw for God. While Moses is up on the mountain getting the law, they're down worship, making an idol and worshiping it.
Now, guys, this is a great verse to use for your parents, especially guys that they won't allow you to get your ears pierced.
What verse?
Verse 2. Was it 2? Yeah, so Aaron said, then take off the rings of gold that are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters. Dad, mom.
It was a thing.
The Egyptians had earrings.
It was the whole spy debacle, right?
Okay, I'm gonna. Yeah, no, so y'all don't do that. Okay, I'm just kidding.
Don't tell Clint.
Golden calf debacle goes down. You guys know that story. Moses comes down and says, "What are you doing?" And then the people of Israel, like a bunch of them, are like, "We're sorry." And so Moses smashes the tablets. Mixes them with gold, melts down the golden calf, makes a whole bunch of the Israelites drink the golden calf that he melts down. A whole bunch of them die. Yeah, lots of people leave out those parts of the story when they're telling it. Yeah, lots of people die in this place.
For real?
Yeah, just read it. That's what happens when you read your Bible. You notice things.
That's crazy.
That don't have it. But Moses says, "Look, they're just stupid people. You know that we're sinners. Like you've read Genesis 3. I haven't read it yet, but you know what happened." They're going to do this. Please spare them. Because, like, look at what all you've done. You brought them out of Egypt. You got them here. You're really going to just end it now? And God relents. He says, okay, fine. We'll head to the promised land. So the rest of Exodus is more laws. He gives them a new set of tablets because Moses broke them, right? Comes down. They get the law. Leviticus is all of the law. This is one big law book. Numbers picks up the story again. So Numbers starts out. So we're in chapter 1 of Numbers. And Moses is taking a census. He wants to know who all is in his camp. They're getting ready to go take the promised land. Everything's fine and dandy. We're back in fulfilling the Abrahamic covenant kind of mindset, right? The land. We're going to go take the land. We were promised it. We got the seed. Like, we're a great nation. Look at how many of us are. And that's the point of Numbers chapter 1. It's saying, look at the great nation that God made out of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He said he was going to do it. It took 400 years, and we got the proof right here. That's the point of starting off with a census. When you're reading your Bible and you're like, what is with all of these boring names and numbers? That's why. He's showing the faithfulness of God. Telling them how to... Sorry, what were you?
So, like, 10 words are probably the most analyzed words in this Bible.
Which 10?
The 1:1, now the Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting in the... And it has whole page.
Oh, you're talking about the Net Bible.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that. Net Bible's a nice little tool. Talk to Nathan if you want to know about the Net Bible. He's got one. He can show you. So the book of Numbers starts. We're heading into the land. We're going to take the promised land. We're going to go. We're going to do it. It's all great. We're going to follow the Lord this time. Yeah, we made a golden calf, but we're past that.
We don't go there.
We're not going to do that again. Come on. Like, we're not going to make the same mistake twice. We trust God this time.
It's like 1,000 times.
Chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11, he's giving you all the ways that Israel is functioning. Chapter 12, Miriam and Aaron get all grumpy that Moses is the only one who gets to talk to God, and God says, well, no, I'm the one who set up that rule, so cool your jets.
Suck it up.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Chapter 13 hits, they're about ready to get into it. So people of Israel are kind of on edge right now, but they're ready. They want to go in and take the land. They want to do this. So Moses sends out 12 spies to go see the land. They're at Kadesh Barnea. The rebellion at Kadesh Barnea. That's where they are. They're setting up camp. 12 spies to go in. And they come back. And what do they say? You guys know this story, right?
Yeah, giants. Too big. We can't giants. Take them.
They're too big.
Except Caleb.
They're too big. Look, these are the grapes they eat. If that's how big their grapes are, just imagine how big they are.
Those are grapes?
Yeah.
Jeez.
What do you think they were?
Giant apricots or something. Really, that's what you mean for?
Apricots here?
They wouldn't be giant apricots because apricots.
Wait, is
so
apricots or apricots?
10 of these spies come back and they're like, we can't do it. They're too big. They're too big. They're huge. They're huge. And 2 of them say no. No. Remember what happened last time we thought that we knew better than God? Who are those 2?
Caleb and Joshua.
Joshua
was
last
one.
Hey, it was an alphabetical order, dude. It has nothing to do with this one was greater. It's just simply an alphabetical order.
Well, I do have a
pretty sure
there
was a Caleb there, too.
Did you read Hebrew backwards? So.
Exactly. See?
So Jacob,
thanks, Clint.
Okay.
Thanks,
Jacob,
Clint.
Joshua.
Yeah, actually, Joshua would be first in alphabetical order.
You read it backwards.
In
see?
Hebrew.
From right to left. So.
Wow.
Congratulations,
Joshua.
Oh,
my
thanks,
goodness.
That is not me, but you know.
On to go.
So they come back. Caleb and Joshua are the only ones who are like, yeah, we can do it. God's with us. All the rest are going, no, we can't, Moses. And the people of Israel say, they're right. We can't do it. We need you to go back to Egypt. We were better off there.
Sorry, what are you talking about?
And that's God's final straw. That's where he goes, all right, I'm done. Can't deal with this with these people. And Moses intercedes again. He says, look, you brought them this far. You can't bail on us now. Look at all you've done. Look at the promises you made. The land, how are you going to give the land to the descendants of Abraham if you don't get it? Gotta go in. You gotta just give them another chance. And God says, okay, I'll give their kids another chance. So everybody who wasn't listed in the census at the beginning of this book of Numbers, everybody whose name you didn't write down, they're gonna get to go in. Everybody whose name is in the census, all of them, anybody 20 and over, they're gonna die here. They're gonna die in the wilderness. You're gonna wander around for 40 years because you wouldn't trust me. That even though these people were big, I was going to get you through it. So the only people who are going to get to go in are people under 20 and Joshua and Caleb, because they trusted me. And so
that
begins.
Means they lived for like a really long time.
40 years of wandering. Yeah, they do live to pretty old ages. Numbers 14:11 is kind of the crux of it. How long will this people despise me? How long will they not believe me in spite of all the signs that I have done among them? I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. He's telling Moses, let's just rebuild with you. And Moses says, no. Like, these are your people. You can't abandon them. Numbers 14:20-45 dish out the punishment. He says 40 years you're going to wander, one for every day that the spies were scouting out the land. Seems like a fair punishment to me. So that's what they do. Yeah, and you mentioned something. They got off easy. And that's something I wanted to stress. Was God said it best, as he often does. How long will they despise me and not believe me in spite of all the signs and wonders that I have done among them? These people saw God up close and personal. They saw everything that he did. And they still didn't trust him enough to go and win in battle with big people. And I want to keep it balanced here, lest we think that we're any better. We would have done the same thing. I can almost guarantee you that if you had been in Israel's shoes, coming out of Egypt, wandering in the desert, getting ready to go, you would have been in with the 10 spies who said that they couldn't take the land. That's, you know, I can't say that for 100% sure, because there were some who did believe, too. But odds say we're no better. I want to stress that, because that's the story coming back through, you know. Genesis 3:15, the fall, sinners. We inherently distrust God. That's part of it. That's how we function on a daily basis, is to doubt God's goodness and to doubt that he has our best interest and to doubt that he will do what he says he will do. And so part of the message of the story is that's the reality. Don't do that. Yeah, you're going to, but don't do that. And how do you not do that? Well, that's the end of the story. Christ comes along and helps out. But we haven't gotten there yet. So,
wait,
spoilers.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's the response I want every time that I reference something later in the book. You go, come on, you're spoiling. Plug your ears and sing a song, because you're ruining the ending.
Yeah, I did that.
So the 40 years of wandering happens. During the rest of Numbers, you have some really great stories. Interesting things that Israel goes through. Korah's Rebellion. That's a big one. See, this is an actual photograph from Korah's Rebellion.
Wow.
Actual photograph. Korah is one of these guys. He gets up. He leads this thing. He says, we don't need God. He's making us wander. We can take the land ourselves. And God opens up a big chasm and swallows them. Aaron's staff buds. It ends up getting stored in the ark. Moses strikes the rock. That's a big story. God tells they're all wandering, you know, and they're complaining and they're thirsty, and they say, Moses, we're hungry and we're thirsty, and God says to Moses, okay, tell the rock to spout out water.
So he hits.
And yeah, Moses is not having one of his best days. And so he strikes the rock twice, and God says, "Well, because of that, you're not going to the
promised land." That's right. That's why they didn't let Moses in the promised land.
Yeah,
that's the rock.
Interesting point. Note the word rock there. That's the first time that a rock has a big starring role in the story. Rocks start having big starring roles in lots of the story. So, the story of the bronze serpent. All kinds of foreshadowing in this story. If you've read the ending and then you look back and you go, oh, did you see all that stuff in there? Like, that's crazy. Like, we should have picked up on that. Everybody is you know, being bitten by serpents. Genesis 3, anyone? Like, remember Genesis 3, strike down the heel, right? They're running all throughout the camp. And so God tells Moses, okay, people are dying because of the serpent. They're dying because of the serpent. Genesis 3, anyone?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And God says, okay, take a serpent and kill it, or make a bronze serpent, excuse me, and put it up onto a staff. And when they look up at the bronze serpent, and some people argue that the Hebrew construction means the cross of the serpent, but I think that's a little bit funky. But look up at the serpent, and they'll be saved. Foreshadowing, anyone?
I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
I don't get that part.
The
rest
of it. When you get to the end of the story, it's going to blow your mind.
Just keep this in mind.
You're disobeying, right? That's why you're...
Yeah. Balaam's oracles comes up in this section. This foreign king comes to a prophet from Israel named Balaam, and he tries to bribe him into prophesying curses over Israel.
Oh, yeah, and his donkey speaks.
And then Balaam's donkey... turns around and says, why are you hitting me? It's a cool story.
I gotta read this stuff.
Chapter 22 through 24. It's a great story.
It's
in
story.
There. And everybody just lost over numbers.
You thought Narnia was the one where it had target animals.
This is our second one at least. We had the serpent at the beginning and the donkey now.
No, the crazy thing is Balaam started talking back. I'd have been freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, Balaam, running the opposite direction.
The donkey says, why are you hitting me? And then Balaam's like, of course I'm hitting you.
Yeah, I would have been like, wait.
That's not normal.
I did not eat
what was that Shrek.
But he goes and he tries to prophesy curses over Israel, and he can't. He ends up blessing Israel instead, because you don't curse Israel.
Just don't do it.
But yeah, you don't do that.
Don't go there.
Just don't do that.
Abrahamic covenant, anyone? I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. You don't want to be on the second half of that sentence.
No.
Deuteronomy comes up. So Numbers is all about the wanderings, right? That's the history of the wanderings. Deuteronomy comes up. Deuteronomy is the second law. So we got a whole new generation. Everybody's died off, right? Everybody's 20 and younger. Those are the only ones who made it to this point through the wanderings. And so we got to retell the law. We got to let them know the covenant that we've entered into as the people of Israel with God. So Deuteronomy is a great book. It recounts the history. So if you've missed all this, right? If you're getting in late, and you need a refresher, you go read the book of Deuteronomy, it'll catch you up. It'll tell you all the important points. It recounts the history, and then it recounts the laws. It tells you what Israel is supposed to be doing with God. Great.
It's the best,
yeah. Chapter 17 is a interesting little thing. Chapter 17, verse 14. So all throughout Deuteronomy, there's also being prophecies, predictions being made. Things that are going to happen in the future. Lots of really clear foreshadowing in the story. So Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. Get there with me. 17, verse 14. When you come to the land of the Lord, your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. You may indeed set a king over you whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as a king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. You must not acquire many horses to himself, or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses, since the Lord your God has said you shall not return to that way. He shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest he turn his heart away, nor shall he acquire for himself excess of silver and gold. God gives them this like little warning, right, of, you know, when you do this, when you set a king over yourselves, helpful advice. Don't go making treaties with Egypt. Don't go having wives from other lands, because they're going to turn his heart away from me. And, you know, don't be too obsessed with gold and silver. Spoiler alert, all the kings do that.
Stop it!
Yeah.
Man.
But remember who they are. Remember what kind of nation they are. They're a nation of... They're a kingdom of...
Priests.
Kingdom of priests. That's how God described them, right? You shall be a kingdom of priests unto me. So the fact that in Deuteronomy he's talking about something that's going to happen in another couple hundred years, again, I think is fascinating.
Well, that's pretty interesting, too, that he's going to appoint one because of the people that clamored for a king.
Yeah. We're going to get to that today.
That's interesting.
Deuteronomy 28. One of the most widely misapplied passages of the Bible, by the way. I hate to burst someone's bubble. Actually, no, I'm very happy to burst somebody's bubble right now. If you've been reading the first half of Deuteronomy 28 and saying, those are for me, they're not. Deuteronomy 28 is where God, in the covenant, so right, he's setting up this covenant, and it's a conditional covenant, remember? He says, if you do these things, I'll give you these things. If you don't do these things, I'll give you these things instead. Deuteronomy 28 is the list of all of those if you do and if you don'ts. So the first half is all the blessings. The first half is, people of Israel, if you follow me, if you keep the law, if you keep your heart set on me, good things are going to happen. You're going to have plenty of crops, plenty of food, plenty of animals. You're going to be safe from enemy countries who come and try and invade you. You will be blessed richly on the earth. Great abundance you'll live in. The second half of Deuteronomy 28, or really the second three quarters of Deuteronomy 28, is all of the curses if they don't do that. They say, you're making this deal with me. You say you're going to keep this covenant. If you don't, these are some of the things that are going to happen to you. Confusion, frustration. Enemy nations are going to come and conquer you. You're going to descend. You're going to be so hungry that you're going to start eating your own children. You're going to have boils and sores. And beasts will rip apart your flesh. And nations will enslave you. And they'll take you away to places you don't want to go, across the sea. It's a scary chapter to read.
Do they actually eat their own children?
Yes.
Sounds a lot.
You get to the part in Kings where they start doing that, and the king goes, I think the king is going, oh, we were warned about this. It said in Deuteronomy 28.
You can just make more.
Make more kids?
Yeah, it sounds like just normal.
It should not be a
Bible. So, yeah, again, I highly encourage you to read all of Deuteronomy 28. And don't stop at verse 14 once the blessings are over. Read the whole chapter. And then think through the history of Israel and say, did this stuff happen?
The curses are taking longer than the blessings.
Yes, yes, sir.
And most people quote the blessings.
Chapter 30 reiterates the promise of land. Moses says, you know, this is the land that God's promised us way back from Abrahamic covenant. And by the way, we need to make sure we're circumcised. That's also the mark of the Abrahamic covenant. So we're still the people of Abraham while we're agreeing to the second covenant, the Mosaic covenant. So we're adding layers. Remember, we're adding layers to the story. It's getting more complex. And then chapter 32 is fascinating. Chapter 32 is this prophetic psalm that Moses sings. And it tells you the whole story. Like, all the way through Jesus and how he's going to be rejected. And the people of Israel will wander and be in exile. And it's crazy. So, just quick examples to pull out. Chapter 32, verse 4. The rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are justice. The rock. You remember the rock from earlier that Moses struck? Mm-hmm. That I told you was going to be... The rock is a theme in this song. The rock. The corner of the rock that the builders rejected. The cornerstone. Christ is that rock. Jesus calls himself the rock multiple times.
Is that why Peter's name? Peter?
Yeah, he's Petros.
Oh.
Little rock.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Rockito.
Could build it like that. Yeah. Verse 15 of chapter 32. Chapter 32, Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 15. But Jeshurun grew fat. Jeshurun is another name for Israel, by the way. Grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, stout, and sleek. Then he forsook God who made him and scoffed at the rock of his salvation. They stirred him to jealousy with strange gods, with abominations. They provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons and were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you, and you forgot the God who gave you birth. Israel is going to abandon God again. And this is all in the covenant that they're making, talking about how they're going to remain faithful. And Moses is putting this in there, but going, by the way, you're not going to keep this covenant that you're about to sign. It's not going to happen. It's a fascinating read. Go through Genesis. I've read through it about 12 times in the last 2 weeks, and I'm just getting bits and pieces. There's so much in there. Chapter 32, I think, is like the whole story in a nutshell. Chapter 33, Moses is almost gone. He's about to die, and he finishes with blessing on each tribe of Israel. Remember Jacob's 12 sons? They're still the 12 tribes. They're about to go in and conquer the land. He's about to pass the reins off to Joshua as the new leader of Israel. And he gives blessings to each of the tribes. Just like, you remember when that happened last? Jacob at the end of the story of Joseph, yeah.
Yep.
Genesis 48, 49, and 50, I think is where it is. Jacob, right before he dies, blesses all 12 of his sons. Moses, right before he dies, blesses all 12 of the tribes. In much the similar way.
It's a sign.
Repetition. So there's some major shifts going on in the story. What do you notice so far? Here's a few for you to notice. From single characters to a nation. We've been dealing with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Adam, Noah. And now we're into Moses and all of Israel. Lots of people. From the Abrahamic covenant to the Mosaic covenant. The Abrahamic covenant started, it's still going, but we're adding a layer here. Mosaic covenant, that's where our focus is right now. Abrahamic covenant's unconditional, right? And the Mosaic covenant's conditional. If you do this, I'm going to do this. From broad rule, tend the garden, do good on the face of the earth, scatter, multiply. It's pretty simple instructions. To very specific law, 613 commandments. Keep these laws as my people who are set apart and holy. These are the shifts in the story. Some things that are still going on, though, is that we're still looking for the seed. Right? That hasn't been resolved yet. The conflict is still building. And we're seeing the whole impart of, sin and death thing all throughout this story. Just because of basic storytelling? Because it's an unresolved conflict. Good story resolves all of these conflicts. So yeah, as you're reading, I encourage you to find all the other unresolved conflicts. Just that's the first one. Any other major shifts you're noticing in the story?
Mm,
We're about to see some big ones, so. We're gonna sprint through Joshua, Judges, and 1 Samuel. So, Moses hands off the nation of Israel to Joshua. He says, you're in charge now. You got to take the land. You got to do it. They're on your side. They're ready. They're going to follow God's rules. Joshua sends in some spies to scout out the land, kind of like Moses did, right? And they come back and they say, we're ready. Let's do it. So they march across the Jordan. He parts the Jordan River, you know, kind of like Moses did with the Reed Sea.
Yeah.
He goes in and he takes Jericho, first city that he conquers. You've got a map of Joshua's conquest. There's actually secular professors who will go back and study Joshua's conquest of the land of Canaan for battle strategy, because he was like way ahead of his time. He did it perfectly. He broke through the land of Jericho, grabbed Jericho, split into two campaigns, the north and the south. He just marched through south of Canaan, taking each city as it came. He marched through the north of Canaan, taking each city as it came. He made a few mistakes along the way. He makes a treaty with Gibeon. He spares a couple people that he's not supposed to. He has a little run-in with Ai. He realizes that they didn't follow all of God's rules, and so they lose a battle. And so he has to go and kill this guy named Achan because he didn't follow God's rules. And then he goes back and he wins the battle of Ai. Again, this is all in the book. This is all in the story of Joshua. Read it. It's awesome. The story of Joshua is one of those ones that could easily be made into an action movie nowadays. I just wish they would. I wish they would follow the text.
Amen.
I better be starring.
No.
But Batman as Joshua. The first half of Joshua is conquering the land. They go through and they take most of it. Unfortunately, they don't take all of it. Turn to Joshua 13. So this is the end of the conquest. Joshua's getting old. Chapter 13 of Joshua. Verse 1. Now Joshua was old and advanced in years. And the Lord said to him, you are old and advanced in years.
Makes sense.
And there remains yet very much land to possess. God says there remains very much land yet to possess. This is the land that yet still remains. He lists it. He tells them all the places that he's promised to the descendants of Abraham but hasn't conquered yet. Verse 6. All the inhabitants of the hill country of Lebanon, Misrepoth, Maim, even all of Sidonians. Second half of verse 6. I myself will drive them out before the people of Israel. Only allot the land to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. Now therefore divide the land as an inheritance to the 9 tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh. So Joshua doesn't finish the job. He doesn't get all the land that God promised Abraham way back when. Remember, the Nile's over here in Egypt, and the Euphrates is up here in Mesopotamia. Remember, God promised that you're going to have land that stretches from the Great River in Egypt to the Euphrates. This is where I say God knew what he was talking about. He knew geography. He knew that was the land he was going to give to Israel. And he clearly tells Joshua he didn't finish giving him all the land. There's still some that has yet to be conquered. But this is what he divvies up. That tells me that the Abrahamic covenant is still in effect. It still hasn't been fulfilled. It still hasn't gotten all the land. Unless they get it later in the story. We'll find out when we get there. But so far, we're still waiting on all of those things to happen. Land, seed, and blessing. He divvies up the land. You got this awesome passage where Caleb runs into his portion. You know, God's fulfillment of his promise to Caleb that he would enter the land. Great, great little section in Joshua. And then we get to the period of the Judges. Judges, also quite an interesting book. Another one that would make a great movie if they would just do it and do it right. But
especially like Noah.
Noah
was horrible.
But they get into they conquer the land. Joshua divvies it up. He tells them how they're going to operate as a nation. Nation of priests. Chapter 24 of Joshua. Joshua chapter 24. Give me 7 more minutes. Give me 7 more minutes, then we'll be done. Chapter 24 of Joshua. They come in, they get the land, and Joshua lines up all the people. He says, we did it. We got all the land that we can. We're going to set up shop here in the land of Canaan. Are you going to follow the rules that God has laid out for us? Will you agree to this covenant? Will you keep it?
Yes.
And they all say, yeah, we're going to do it. 24 verses 14 through 28. So we'll start in verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity. Joshua's talking to the people of Israel at this point. Verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served before the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers or those in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. Then all the people answered, far be it from us that we should forsake Yahweh to serve other gods, for it is Yahweh our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight, and preserved us all in the way that we went, and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the people, the Amorites, who lived in the land. Therefore we also will serve Yahweh, for he is our God. But Joshua said to the people, you are not able to serve Yahweh, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good. And the people said to Joshua, no, we will serve the Lord. And Yahweh said to the people, you're a witness against yourselves that you have chosen Yahweh to serve. And they said, we are witnesses. He said, then put away the foreign gods that are among you and incline your heart to Yahweh, the God of Israel. And he sets up a stone. He says, this stone, rock, stone, will be a witness to you, against you, that you will keep the word of the law. He reads the whole book of the law. He reads Exodus 19 through Deuteronomy 30 in one sitting. Yeah, it's doable. They did it. I encourage you to do it too. They say, we're going to do it. We're going to keep the law. We're going to follow Yahweh. He's our God. Next page, Judges. We're into the period of the Judges. And, like I said, they're not done conquering Canaan. There were all those lands that had yet to be conquered. They still don't do it in chapter 1. Joshua dies. And then chapter 2 starts. Now the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim. He said, I brought you up out of Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. What is this that you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you. They shall become thorns in your side, and their God shall be a snare to you. So it takes them all of one chapter to break the covenant. No, you can't do it. You can't live up to God's perfect standard. Verse 11, chapter 2. All the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. Baal is the name of the main god of the Philistines and the Amorites and the surrounding nations in Phoenicia. And this is a common theme we're going to see all throughout Judges. They're serving the Baals and the Ashtaroths and the Chemoshes and the gods of the nations around them instead of serving God. They're not being set apart, holy, different. They're going along with crowd. The theme of Judges, if you want an easy way to know what Judges is all about, turn to the very end of the book of Judges. Judges 21:25. Last verse in the book. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That is the theme of the book of Judges. In those days, there's no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. They're not following God. They're not following a king. They're doing whatever they think is right. And so the theme that you see in Judges is this cycle of everybody in Israel follows after the Baals and the Ashtaroths and the gods of the other nations, and God rises up a leader. And he restores them back to a place of right standing. And pretty quickly, they go off following the Baals and the Astaroths and the foreign gods. And God raises up a leader and restores them to a place of good standing. And pretty soon they start following the Baals and the Astaroths. And the cycle continues. That's the Book of Judges in a nutshell. You see that cycle repeated 12 times. These are all the names of the judges that God raises up to restore them, and they follow it. You guys got this in the back of your perception. But this nice little chart tells you who's persecuting them, which nation God is using to punish them for their transgression, just like he promised he was going to do in Deuteronomy 28. If you don't follow me, I'm going to bring nations against you that are going to punish you. He does it. It's how many years they're in persecution, and then those are the sections of scripture that each judge covers. Your main ones are Ehud, Deborah, Gideon, Jephthah, and Samson.
And Samson.
All of them have interesting foreshadowing things to the seed showing up, but we'll get there.
Othniel would have been Leah's middle name if she was a boy.
Why would you do that to me?
If you want to know my favorite judge, it's Shamgar.
You could have
go read Judges 3:31. He's awesome. Too.
Oatmeal, eaten oatmeal.
Why would you?
Ruth is a character who comes along in the next book.
He's so awesome.
One more minute. One more minute. We're gonna get to do the whole book of Samuel in 1 minute. It's gonna be great.
Ready?
Ruth is at the end of Judges. She's at the period of the Judges, right? She comes along at near the end of this period of about 300, 400 years of Israel not following God and leaders rising up to restore them. She's a lady from a foreign nation whom Israel is whoring after. And she comes back into Israel, marries into the family of Israel, and the book of Ruth, it's a good book. It's only 4 chapters long, worth reading. But the end is where I wanted to focus on. Part of why she's mentioned is for the last few chapters, last few verses. Ruth 4, verse 18. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon, who fathered Salmon, who fathered Boaz. Boaz is the one who marries Ruth. Okay. If we had time for that story, we would tell it. But Boaz and Ruth have a son named Obed, who has a son named
Jesse,
who has a son named
David.
Like King David?
King David.
Oh.
So it's a little bit of foreshadowing in the story, right? Letting you know there's this character coming up who you're going to want to know pretty well. We got like
great grandma,
two whole chapters. We got two whole books about him.
So Ruth is
First Samuel is the next book, and Samuel is the main character in that book. So period of Judges comes to a close with Samuel. Samuel's the last judge. He comes up, and God starts talking to him, like in ways that he hasn't talked to people in a long time. And Samuel starts speaking for God.
It's not how that works.
Let's get that. Last bit. We're going to end with this. First Samuel chapter 8. Stay with me. Just a little bit longer. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Starting in verse 19. Samuel's been talking to God. He's been letting the people of Israel know what's what. Everything's been good. He's getting old. And the people of Israel start getting grumpy. Verse 19. The people of Israel refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, "No! There shall be a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." And when Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Obey their voice and make them a king." Samuel then said to the men of Israel, "Go, every man to his city." Before that, earlier, he tells him why. Verse 7, he said, "Obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you." They've rejected me. Samuel, I knew this was going to happen. I told Moses it was going to happen back in Deuteronomy chapter 17, I think it was. This is a new. We knew this was going to happen. Give them the king that they want. Let them see how much they like it. And so Samuel goes and anoints King Saul, and we're going to pick up there next week. Saul and David. So next week we'll go through most of the rest of the New Testament. You thought this was a lot.
Didn't David and Jonathan have something going on, or was it not Jonathan?
It was Jonathan.
They were buds.
We'll cover that next week. So that's where we are in the story.
But the guy didn't like, it was Saul that didn't like Jonathan.
Jonathan died in battle.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, but it's
specifically battles is what they mentioned.
Yeah.
No, it's some curse.
A king goes out to conquer new land. A judge leads them in battle to get people out of the land they're in. It's defense versus offense. Yeah. Okay.
It is dead. Burned himself alive.
I will see you guys Friday at 5:30, and we're gonna be rolling out of the church parking lot at 5:31.
All right, that's always how it happens.
That does not give us a lot of time to put our stuff in the car.
Yeah, so you might want to get there a little bit before 5:30.
So like 5.
4 or 5.
200. There's no way.
Well, you have one day.
My money's on that we don't leave it at 5:31.
I'm guessing it probably is 6:30. Yeah, my money's on me get there.
Okay. And y'all crash there.
Yeah.
Just teleport.
Yeah.
Everyone get there at 5:31.
I'm definitely
going to get there. Stephen's already gone.
He's going to the beach house.
Because I'm pretty sure I'm working.